Croeso and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to do such epic deep dives into Welsh rulers that we plan two parts in advance because we're that bloody good. To know more Welsh history than you and lord it over you. I'm Jack, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow Baron of Bevs, Franco.
I don't think we should ever be too cocky in case we get everything wrong. If we lean on the Barons of Bevs and Barons of Banter rather than the Lords of Knowledge, yeah. I think we're in safer territory.
It's okay. I think if you read back onto that, all I've said is that we planned two episodes in advance. I never said anything about them being accurate. Oh, good.
So, did you say knowledge? We have right. More knowledge than you.
I said we lord it over you.
Oh, okay. But,
but that might be,
I didn't say we
knew
it. Misplaced.
Yeah.
Misplaced.
I never
arrogance.
Said we accurately lord it. Yeah. We're just the arrogant bastards.
The arrogance of youth. Oh. When this comes out, we'll know if we have a woman president or an orange president. That's quite exciting, isn't it?
Oh yeah, of course. Because yeah, we're ahead, aren't we, at the moment?
Yeah, we're back doing like good regular recording now. So we're stockpiling a few, so we're not fucking scrabbling around going, I can't make it. So it's quite
nice. Use a Patreon. We don't have anything else.
Yeah, and it's the wrong Patreon actually.
Oh shit! You know,
but bit admin up top. So we just had the two Wales and America episodes, haven't we?
Yes.
We had really nice feedback on the first episode because we haven't actually released the second one whilst we're recording this. But someone got in touch with us called Richie, and he said, just listen to your latest episode about Welsh America. Loved it. I'm a Welshman living in America, so loved the connection. I live just down the road from Cardiff by Sea. The founder had a Welsh wife who persuaded him to name it after Cardiff, which is pretty sick. And he's in Southern California, near north of San Diego.
Oh, Cali.
He sent a photo of the little of Cardiff by the sea, and it looks mad. It's
you sent this like the welcome to Cardiff by the sea type thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got Welsh dragons at the bottom.
Yeah,
it founded 1911, two Welsh dragons at the bottom, and then it's got this absolute mermaid. What's the thing? The Little Mermaid esque vibes. It's oh, very funny though.
Just so, looking it up now because it's you sent it earlier, didn't you? I'm just trying to find it. Oh, here we go. Yeah, two Welsh dragons, and very like Honolulu, isn't it? With
it is Honolulu.
It's got lots of very like bright flowers on the side, but it also I've just noticed the two daffs either side as well. Daffodils.
Yeah, that's clever.
And like you said, the Little Mermaid like seashell in the middle as well.
Seashells on the seashore.
Exactly. Just to tell you, it is by the sea.
Mm. delicious. I skipped the beers tonight. I've been feeling a bit sluggish
You were going straight to the bloody rummies, didn't you?
Yeah, and I've had one pint already, and it was gorgeous. Because I went to London with my two mates this weekend for like a food trip / mega sesh. And we were trying to make sure we don't get too, like, we get hammered, but say alive, you know, so we planned it around food. And I was on the Guinness, which I never drink, but we went to this pub called the Devonshire, which like does London's best Guinness, and it was so good, man. It was like a drink in a fucking coffee frappuccino. It was like a little
Thinking I need to move on to the Guinness, because like ever since I discovered that it's actually not like hugely calorific. It's lower calorie than like a lot of lagers that
I had a nanny called Nanny Golf, and she was the first female golf captain in playing Guinness in the Guinness golf course. And she used to smoke 80 cigarettes a day back to back. So she just smoked chain smoker. She was so skinny. And the only thing she used to drink 4 half pints of Guinness a day. That was like the only thing she kind of got off a substance. So 4 half pints of Guinness and 80 fags. And she actually used to eat coal, which is mental.
Eat coal.
Yeah, apparently it's really good for indigestion. And
I feel that like, you know, like you get like charcoal is like it absorbs bad things in your in your belly.
It's like anti-cancerous or something like that. Yeah, I think it is that. But it's just mad. And also, I was so little when she died quite young because her lifestyle wasn't great.
Eating on a diet of coal, Guinness and fags. Yeah,
and I remember that, she gave me one of those like those things that, you know, you close one eye and you turn, you put your other eye in like a kind of like a looking glass thing, like a you know, in Robin Hood where he's trying to count all the men coming at him, and Freeman.
Like, it's not a kaleidoscope. I know what you mean, but it's like it splits your vision, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, and you turn the end of it. But I didn't know how to blink. But it was so I didn't know how to like close one eye, and I was getting really upset that I couldn't do it. And she gave me her fag to hold while she tried to show me. I remember it burnt my hand. I was like three. And she's
so you took a drag then. She's like, oh,
I don't remember what she looked like, because the amount of smoke that was in the kitchen when me and my mum would go over there, it was like genuine. She'd finished one Marlboro, put it out, light up another one, put it out, light up another one. Because like, they were so cheap back then as well.
Like walking through a morning mist. You couldn't see anything a couple of feet in front of you.
Sorry, but back to the Guinness, on the Guinness. It is really nice. But do you ever, I gag sometimes when I drink pints. I feel like I get a bit, like a bit of a sick reflex. And like when I was getting towards like the final like fifth, I drink it and I'd be like, oh, it does feel a bit sicky. Like, because it's not like carbonated. It's a bit weird. It's like drinking a big cold pint of milk. And
it's smooth, but it's thick as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah, which pits me off a bit. Yeah, it does kind of creep me out.
If it was white, you'd be nowhere near it, would you? With your
that's the other thing.
Your anti-white liquid.
I don't drink milk, and it's also it's got a big white foamy thing. So I wanted to scoop the foam off because that's just a bit too jizz like for my liking.
It's getting too close to the bone, isn't it? Yeah, I get it. No, I've been debating, like, maybe I should just wean myself onto it or something, because I used to think I couldn't drink lager for the longest time, and look at me now. Yeah. So, like, you know, things can be changed. So I don't know if I need to, I don't know, maybe start trying to make the change. Because, like I said, as soon as I discovered that it was actually not hugely calorific, I was like, ooh, maybe give it a little go.
But, I mean, it's still nothing does beat like an ice cold Carling.
Well, it's that, isn't it? Yeah. What else can you want?
Oh, no, I won't go into that. I'll just say, hold back the dogs of war. And they'll know what I mean by that.
Hold back the dogs of war. Yes, please. Yeah.
So for those, thank you for your kindness, but we don't, just don't.
We've taken the beach. We don't need to incur any further damage. All right. Just listen. You all know what I'm saying.
Anyway, how have you been, man?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Should we do a little Patreon shout out while I got it in my head before we forget?
Mate. Yeah.
So the next one on the list is a beautiful Welsh name, Rodri Jones.
Oh, Rodri.
Could you be more Welsh? Could you have the fucking the Celtic blood anymore in your veins with a name
Rodri
like that?
The Great himself.
Rodri Jones, Rodri Ap Yons. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yonny. Rodney.
I've just made Joe Jones less Welsh by going Yonny.
Rodri, you plug at. The remake, Only Fools and Horses. Instead of Del Boy, Die Boy.
We've just coined a bloody patron episode there, isn't it? Recast Only Fools with Welsh actors.
Rodri Plonker. Uncle Alfred. And also
Die Boy.
Die Boy, yeah, that's a good one.
Die Boy.
Boise. Boise's quite Welsh anyway. Boise. Boise Bachy.
Uncle Albert. What's that? Uncle Arvon. What's another?
Uncle Arvon is perfect. Tadki. We'll come back to that.
this is too good for a mainline episode. So good. I've been choking on my beer.
Choking you what? Your chicken?
Your beer. Very good.
Just a little choke.
I'm just so good. I'm choking my chicken on the fucking call.
Carried away.
Christ. Oh. Well, cheers, Rod.
Cheers, Rodri. Welcome, Rodri.
Jonesy, nice one.
Yeah. How do you want to get going? If we're 10 minutes in, it's kind of a long episode. Should we start?
I know you prepped me by saying this was a longie.
Well, it's 6,000 words.
6,000 words.
I make my font really big, but it says 29 pages. But I have it landscape, so it's like it's easy for me to read. So it's
what fucking system have you got set up on your Word? Yeah. Massive font landscape. That's the complete opposite to most people.
Yeah. I find it a bit easy because it's like a book. It's like a book. Like the things you read in a book.
I think it's not actually that long a page to get through, is it? There's just more of them.
You know, I've only seen like Harry Potter, the final seven part one.
You said you watched like 2 and 7.
Yeah. I've seen the one with Dobby, and then I've seen the one where it's the second to last one.
So you've seen Chamber of Secrets and Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yeah.
Absolute opposite ends of the chronological spectrum, yeah.
But I really enjoyed it, man. I thought it was so much fun.
Catching on to what the rest of us are watching. You've got to watch it. Mate, Philosopher's Stone, I tell you what, it's brilliant, man.
Do you know my observation, though? One thing I keep saying to Emma, Dumbledore, more like double dork. And she
nice. Likes
to be like, Gryffindor, more like Gryffindork. Again, dork.
And Ravenclaw, more like Ravendork. Yeah.
That's pathetic. That's stupid. Gandalf, Grimble. What's he called? Grimbles? Oh, he's the massive Grimbles. Guy. Ronnie Coltrane.
Hagrid, not Grimble. It's more like, are you about to say Grimdork?
Grimdork. No, but I like that he's such an idiot. He's like, Christ and Cribbins. I
should never have said that.
Yeah, he seems the most irresponsible man to leave old Harry Potter with. Oh, Christ, I'm in the right fucking... Run over the Bristol Channel and I've accidentally dropped Potter in the water.
I've often thought they should remake the Potters with, like, R-rated swearing and stuff, because him would be great. Oh, fucking hell, I haven't done that. Like, oh, God, fucked up there. And I'm sorry. I was a right dumb cunt on the way over here, right? And
you'll never guess what.
On that little moped I had, right? The flying moped, I dropped him off the bloody side, didn't I?
What is quite depressing, the amount of dead cunts are in that film. It's just like,
oh, yeah.
Potter, dead. Coltrane, dead.
Dead.
Maggie
Dumbledore,
Smith.
Dead.
Dumbledore.
Maggie Smith.
Dead.
Recently
but Dumbledore
dead.
Number one is different to the rest of the films, but is both Dumbledore's dead?
No, so Dumbledore is in number one and two, and then that's when Richard Harris was brown bread, and so from three onward you get Gambon then again, also dead.
Michael
so,
Gambon. Oh, yeah, see, yeah, the curse of the dork.
Oh, curse of the Harry Potter, mate. Everyone who fucking casts it dies eventually.
Yeah, 20 years later they die. It's so creepy.
I wonder why they, you know, Dumbledore as well, the Richard Harris version. I do wonder, he was pretty fucking old when they cast him.
He did.
I do think, like, you know, this was meant to go for seven, 8 years. Yeah. Like, he didn't have it much in him. Well,
did they
come
out every year as well?
I think it basically did, yeah. Because if you went to see the first one at 11, you kind of saw them in age.
Well, that makes sense, because like, I saw the last one in uni when I was like 20, which is like roughly eight years after the first one.
Yeah, so I think I must have saw the last one. Let me think now. So if you're 11 when you see the first one, it's 8 years after that. So yeah, 19. You were like 20.
Like not 19 forever. Yeah, I mean, I think it was like it came out in my second year of uni, which was when I was about 19, 20. Mm. So that all makes perfect sense. Good point, mate.
That all lines up. There we go.
Yeah, moving on. From one prodigal son, Potter, to another, Lord Rees. Just had to make sure we all knew who I was talking
about. It's a nice segue.
I heard the other day that someone had never seen the word segue written down, so they called it segua.
Segua. Let me segua into something.
Yeah, just segua. And also I heard that people didn't know how to pronounce Hermione's name when they read the books, because it's spelled like Hermonje or something.
I, in my head, it was Hermione.
Hermione,
when I first read the books.
Yeah.
I was like, so, old Hermione. And I was like, what a stupid bloody name. And then that didn't change when it was like, it's actually Hermione.
Yeah,
I was like,
that's, just not a, stupid. That's not a name. She either. Is so bad in this. The acting for the young kids is truly fucking awful in the first one. Yeah. But they are like, they're fucking scroats. They're like 10 years old.
They do come into their own. And I think when you watched it as an 11-year-old, you didn't notice as much.
Oh, they're sweet. I think they're genuinely, they all seem incredible. So I'll tell you my hot takes from the start. Ginger lad, I think he's great. I think he's really fun. Hermione.
Oh, bloody hell. You can't hear that.
I'll go on the first course. He's like riding up. Yeah.
And on you the first go... move, I'll go.
It's so
wrong,
bad.
Wait!
I think you can almost see Harry reading the words in front of him. And you can see, like, none of them react to each other.
Like a young Marlon Brando having the fucking, like, the piece of paper with all the lines on it in front of him. Yeah.
It does feel like, it feels like those three aren't reacting to each other. They're saying their words and waiting for the cue to say their next lines. They never react to each other. But I don't mind. They're really fun. And the world building is class. The fucking freaks who run the bank. I nearly pissed my guts out laughing so hard at them.
Oh, they are just the little disgusting. Goblins.
Yeah, pig nose. They're all like,
yeah. Well, there's you know how J.K. Rowling is like a massive anti-trans person now. Yeah. There's loads of stuff come out, like, you know, it's almost like, I don't know if it's, I wouldn't say it's revisionist, but they're like going, notice how all the bankers have long noses? And they're like saying, like, that's J.K. Rowling saying that, like, the bankers are Jews. Oh. And it's like, then it's like,
I mean, that feels a bit tenuous.
And things like, there's a black kid in it, and he's called like something Shacklebolt, you know, and like the only Asian character in it is called like Cho Chang, and like this little thing.
I'm not a fan of her, but I do think sometimes when you say, you know, when the left will just jump on, it's like,
yeah. I did think, you know, there's enough to go off to not like her. I don't need anything more.
Yeah. I was kind of struck that there's, I mean, it's of the time, but there is like, everyone is white. You see like one black kid, one Asian kid, and then the rest is just like the one. Like, this is meant to be a mythical world, but we still have these like social norms that she wouldn't dare break. What, you feel
the
like
head of the school? Old white man,
all
right?
Old white guy. Anyway, this is now predicted to be in a Harry Potter 20 years later. But we're going to watch an episode.
Lord Reese, we're doing Harry Potter now. Okay,
we're doing one a week up until Christmas, which is quite fun. They feel really Christmassy, and I'm sure everyone knows that.
They very much. I think loads of people do them at Christmas. Film. Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, Pivot, Lord Reese. Yeah. So to start with, it can be quite confusing in Welsh history when everyone is called names like Llywelyn ap Celyn or Celyn ap Llywelyn, you know, when they're the son of, so say, you know, Llywelyn, son of Celyn, and then it's Celyn, son of Llywelyn, who's then the nephew, the grandson of Celyn itself.
They also tend to, like, in honour, name their son after their father,
after
don't they?
So it's, like fucking, like, so it's kind of like one of those snakes that eats his own tails, you know, it's quite fucking cannibalistic in Welsh history. So we've covered Lord Reese before because he's the son of a famous couple, the original power couple, if you will. But I'll come to that shortly. So I'm just going to do a little background of like lineage of who this person is. And I think he's up there now with one of the best people I've learned about. So Reese's grandfather, Reese ap Tewdwr, or Tewdwr, I'm going to say in Welsh, it sounds like fat water, Tew and Dwr.
Tewdwr.
He was king of Order Heibarth, which we know is a kingdom in West Wales. But he was killed in Brycheiniog or Brecon in 1093 by Bernard de Newfamarsh, which you can tell already was like a Norman French name. So following his death, most of the Heibarth was taken over by the Normans, and the locals endured a cruel and vicious rule, which is something we know is quite common from the Norman rules of native Welsh people. Reese was the fourth son of Griffiths ap Rhys. Again, you know, quite confusing. So Griffiths ap Rhys means Griffiths son of Rhys, also has a son called Reese. But he was the fourth son of Griffiths ap Rhys, six sons. So he had six sons himself. And he was the ruler, part ruler of De Heibarth. This Griffiths ap Rhys. And his wife was Gwenllian Ferch Griffiths, daughter of Griffiths ap Cynan, king of Gwynedd.
Go on, Gwenllian.
So we covered this before. Griffiths ap Rhys is from West Wales. Griffith ap Cynan was king of Gwynedd in North Wales. They joined together and fought valiantly to push back a lot of the Normans. So they have fighting blood in them. Gwenllian, we've done a whole episode on Gwenllian, so check out Isabelta. And she is this warrior princess who fought on the run for like 20 years of running a campaign against the Normans, a really fruitful campaign.
She's hardcore.
Hardcore. Rhys's father, like I mentioned, Griffith ap Rhys, he was forced to flee Ireland whilst the Normans ravaged West Wales, and he later returned to De Heybarth and ruled part of the kingdom, but was forced to flee again in 1127. When Rhys was born in 1132, his father held only a commote in Cayo in Cantref, in Maud. So like, he, by the time Rhys came into the picture, the parts they did own, it was really minuscule. And considering that Lord Rhys's grandfather owned all of De Heybarth up until his death, the kingdom of De Heybarth has now been massively reduced to almost a no longer a Welsh kingdom, but a part of the Norman Empire. Yeah, Cantref. It was called a commote of Cayo in Cantref Mawr. It's a place name.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's Cantref Mawr as in a place name, not a Cantref. Yeah.
No, Cantref. But I do actually come on to Cantrefs in a second, so... But yeah, a few years later, in 1136, Lord Rhys' father, Griffith ap Rhys, joined forces with the rulers of Gwynedd and went on a real hot streak of victories over the Normans, including a huge victory at Creag Maud. We've also covered that on the pod, so go check out on that, plus the Owain Gwynedd episode, which was one of those rulers of Gwynedd who was at the battle. So during this period, the Welsh finally united, and after lots of Norman invasions, the West and the North joined forces really effectively, and they led a series of attacks throughout the 12th century against the Normans, who had pretty much taken over. They conquered England, and they had taken over now nearly all of Wales. And we've done a series of episodes on that. So if you haven't checked them out already, Creag Mawr, one of our early ones, which is a great massive battle where the first use of the longbow is kind of disputed as happening. Owain Gwynedd we've done, plus Gwenllian. So I'd go listen to them. And so after this big battle and how the North and the West had joined up further, Lord Rhys's family stood in much better stead now in De Heybarth because they managed to push back a lot of the Normans. But in 1137, both of his parents were now brown bread. Deado. Gonzo. The poor bugger.
Deado, right? They're gone. Off the more coil.
Yeah. So they are gone. So, then this is like, I won't go in. I don't want to do. I don't know if it's spoilers, if it's history, but there's like you can learn about their demise in the episodes we've done previously. But this left Griffith ap Rhys four sons to work closely together to defend and consolidate their territory. So that's the first. This is the four sons from his marriage with. He had two marriages. He had one marriage where he had two sons already, and then he had four kids later on. But some of these kids had died in previous battles, so now there are four sons remaining. And Lord Rhys is the youngest of those four sons, I think. I might correct myself in a second, but I'm pretty sure he's the youngest of the four sons. So this left these four sons to work really closely together to defend and consolidate their territory. Each son, Anaroid, Cadell, Maredith, and Rhys took the lead in succession. So they kind of shared things between them, and there seems to be no discord between them, which is really rare.
It's kind of unusual, as I have to say, for the time, because usually it descends into bloody madness when something like that happens, because they all fight for more power and land or whatever.
It speaks volumes of the woman Gwenllian was, I think, and the man her father was, his father was, to the fact that they bought this, because like you said, they cannibalize themselves, they destroy themselves, they do the work that the foreigners are trying to do towards them. Like, the Welsh are more deadly to the Welsh than the English are to them. Whereas in this, they kind of taught this trust level of, we are equal, we're brothers, stick together. And there seemed to be no discord between them, and they ruled together really well, with some taking the lead at certain points and vice versa. So much so that these brothers became this mad, formidable force and started taking back the lands from the Normans. And they vary in age, which I'll get to in a second. But they're young. They're like young men who are leading their soldiers and leading their family soldiers against this like really well disciplined and well trained Norman army. And like I said, they kind of shared the ownership of who was in charge. But at one point, the leadership of the family was with Rhys's half brother, Anaroid ap Griffith. And in 1143, when Lord Rhys was 11, Anarod was murdered, a death arranged by Cadwaladr ap Griffith, brother of Owain Gwynedd, king of Gwynedd. And we mentioned this before, that his brother was like, Owain Gwynedd's brother was desperate for like power. So he kind of like would, yeah. It's suspected he might have done this on behalf of the Normans or to try and maybe take over the Hayward himself.
Right, yeah.
But Owain Gwynedd respected what his father had done, and he was also fought with a lot of, with Lord Rhys's dad at the Battle of Creagh Mawr and stuff like that. So Owain punished Cadwaladr by depriving him of lands in Ceredigion. So again, it shows that the Welsh just can't unite against a common enemy. They have to fight against each other.
But, always, yeah. Whenever we think like you're getting somewhere, isn't it? There's always something from the inside, like some whatever, something that's happened at you know, with the last generation or something like that, or even just a power grab or something. It always tends to bloody.
Put and a these people in the works, had like. Literally fought together like 10 years ago when they were fighting against. So it was, just classic power hungry, power mad. But the Romanian brothers, Cadell, Meredith and Rhys, they united again to work together to try and achieve the reconquering of Ceredigion and again to bring it back into Deheubarth, which it hadn't been since their grandfather was king. So they kind of looked after Deheubarth and now they're trying to expand what the borders were of it. At this time, Cadell ap Griffith took over as head of the family, whilst the famous and formidable Norman, Gilbert de Clare, east of Pembroke, rebuilt Carmarthen Castle.
The bloody de Clares.
We've done this for long enough now that we know these characters, which is quite cool when you start to learn.
The Clare family are like, they're a royal pain in the ass for the Welsh. Quite literally. They're always getting involved. Yeah.
So he rebuilt Carmarthen Castle in 1145 and then began a campaign to reclaim Ceredigion. He built a castle in the Camote of Mabrid. I'm not really good at saying this name. It's quite an old Welsh name. Mabudryd. Mabudryd. So, he rebuilt Carmarthen Castle with a lot of funding from the wider Norman conglomerate. And he built a castle in the Camote. But Cadell, aided by Hywel ap Gwynedd, Owain Gwynedd, who was another person from Gwynedd, destroyed it in 1146. So every time they were building, the Normans were building these newer castles, more up-to-date and stuff, these brothers and help from the north would destroy them. And this is the first time Rhys appears in the annals. So in 1146, it's fighting alongside his brother Cadell and Meredith in the capture and assault of Llan Steffan Castle. So what? He's born in 1132. This is 1146. Mm-hmm. That makes him 14 years old. And he's fighting in this war. And then quickly this followed by the capture of Whiston in 1147 in Carmarthen. And then in 1147, then Carmarthen in 1150, and then Lochaber in 1151. And then in 1151, so this is like a series of wars, battles and stuff that these brothers are just constantly winning. Like they do get like
absolute purple patch.
But this is like, what's that? That's 4 years plus. From 46 to 51, that's like, what's that? 5 years of just attacking these Norman castles, winning at all these castles as well. So they don't always have enough men to stay there, but it doesn't matter. They burn it down and then go back to retreat to their strongholds. And then 1151, Cadell, who'd been kind of rooting for the Lord Rhys's brothers, he was attacked whilst he was out hunting by a group of Norman and Flemish knights from Tenby, and they left him for dead. Surprisingly, though, he survived, but he suffered such injuries that he left him unable to play an active role. And in 1153, so a couple of years after the attack, he left on a pilgrimage to Rome. So now it falls to the third oldest, Meredith, and he now is the ruler of the newly restored lands in Deheubarth that his brothers had won back. So every brother gets a bit more of the land to like be in charge.
Yeah, closer.
But they hadn't finished their campaign yet, returning all of Deheubarth back to their family's control, and they were now aiming for Ceredigion once again. So now, they're going back now to focus on Ceredigion, which they wanted to take a good couple of years earlier. But instead of fighting the Normans now, they were actually trying to drive out the sons of Gwynedd, who'd taken over Ceredigion. So whilst all this had been going on, the Normans had been getting weaker because the brothers from Deheubarth had been causing so much aggro.
Of course,
in the north, they'd also been doing the same, and the north saw a power vacuum, and they managed to take over Ceredigion whilst the boys from Deheubarth couldn't.
Tale as old as time, isn't it? We always say this. If the Welsh just fucking stayed on side and actually got the job done, you can fight amongst each other after.
Exactly.
Like, they always do it in the middle, don't they? So annoying.
My next line is, so a classic Welsh tale of struggles for power and land grabs and failing to unify against the threat of the Normans / English, who are still very much a problem, but they focus on these scraps together. So Now, Rhys and Meredith continue their campaign, which began in 1150, aimed at recovering Ceredigion, which is now held by Gwynedd, and had been held by Gwynedd for quite some time. Meredith and Rhys drove her up Gwynedd from Ceredigion by 1153. So this is actually it's just taken up a lot of resources. And it's given the Normans chances to recoup in other areas, and it's just weakened them in some places. It's weakened the Gwynedd in the north. But it's just part of what it is. You know, like we said before, Wales wasn't always a unified thing. Wales has often been these smaller kingdoms.
Yeah, and it's easy to now to be like, oh, why can't they all just, you know, unite as Wales? But they probably didn't think of themselves as Wales at that point. They think of themselves as Gwynedd or
Dyheubarth, exactly. Or
whatever. You know, it was your own thing and everyone else was different.
So in this year, 1153, it's an important year because it's the year Rhys is recorded as being an independent commander for the first time. So he's 23 years old and he took the charge, and apparently, which is quite common for him, he led the army at the front of it, but to not only face, but to completely overwhelm and capture all the Normans at a castle in St. Clair's, which is near Carmarthen area. He now achieved a winning first as a solo commander, which really emboldened him and those around him. And they felt they had a really true Welsh leader in young Rhys. So these two remaining brothers, Meredith and Rhys, would continue their winning ways again, and they destroyed the castles of Tenby and Aberavon in the same year. And they are a real force.
Castle takers.
they take so many. It's crazy how effective they are. They're no longer just like these young brothers, but they're now classed as these powerful warrior leaders. And like I said, you might be thinking these are like, they're under 25 years old, both of them.
What was I doing at fucking under 25?
Yeah. And they were the two youngest sons of Gwenllian Ferch Griffiths, the warrior princess's four sons. So, like I said, she did have two other sons, Morgan and Maelgwyn, but they were killed in battle. Gwenllian.
They were killed with her, weren't they, at the same battle, if I remember.
Yeah, and one of them died defending her. He had his arm broken when a mace came at him.
I was going to say, he put a shield in front of her, didn't he? Yeah, got his arm snapped, bless him.
And like I said, this isn't hugely important, but the other two sons I mentioned, Anaroid and Kadesh, are technically Rhys and Meredith's stepbrothers, as they were from the father's first wife. But from ages of like 15, 16, these two were in the heat of battle, driving the Normans out of here. So I think that common ground connected them all rather than seeing themselves as stepbrothers, whatever. And this is a whole
maybe
family.
Half brothers, I guess maybe they just go, well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because we got the same dad.
Yeah.
Was it same dad or same mum? Sorry.
Same dad. So the four brothers I mentioned were two were from one marriage and two were from the second. And so this is just a whole family of hard fighters, from the mother and father to each and every son in between. And if you remember, their parents would live in forests using guerrilla tactics against the Normans, and after the hit and run would run in different directions with different kids, so if one of them got caught, they'd be able to go back and save the other one. So it's like, right, I'm going this way, you go that way.
Just about to say then, you know, like we just said that two of those sons died with Gwenllian. Mm. Literally, that was the plan, wasn't it? Is that you take two of the kids with Gwenllian, two with, was it Rhys?
Griffith, sorry,
the other way around. Yeah. And yeah, so if you got killed, you still had
your whole family isn't gone.
Two kids with you, yeah.
And they did that for like 20 years on the run with different family members. Now Meredith, the Romanian brother, is also credited with not only attacking but also defending Carmarthen Castle against a Norman assault. And like I said before, they didn't always do this. Often they'd attack it, burn it down, and then go. But apparently in the time there, he managed to have enough men with him and survive the assault to defend it. And it said to have hurled down the ladders himself when they tried to breach the wall. So he was there at the very front line of it when they were trying to put the ladders back up in like Lord of the Rings style, kicking the ladders down as the enemy tried to get
just
them.
About to say, like the Two Towers game where you've got to boot the ladders down. Excellent.
Yeah, although sadly his time came young. In 1155 he died. Right, you know, all the success that they had, and it doesn't seem like he died in battle, but I also couldn't find out exactly how he died, so I just assumed it was like medieval death, you know, like cold or eating a bit
of
rotten
bull. Ways they went back then. Yeah,
we got like a splinter and got gangrene or just general illness. But it is clear this band of brothers, now reduced just to Rhys, had done this incredible work at a young age. So in 1155, Rhys was now the sole ruler of Dyheubarth. And pretty soon after taking charge, Rhys hid rumours that Owain Gwynedd, who we've already done nep on, was actually now planning to invade Ceredigion in order to reclaim it for Gwynedd. And in a move that showed his resolve and abilities, Rhys responded by building a castle in Aber Dyfi in 1156. The threatened invasion never took place, and there's this author claimed that Owain's intentions may have been just to test the resolve of this new ruler. So there's an author called Turvey, who is quite a famous Welsh author, who says he thinks that maybe Owain had just done this to see how much minerals Rhys had.
Yeah, and when he cojones he had between his legs, and then he went, look, I was building a castle, mate. And he went, yeah, fair enough, all right, well, I'll leave you to it.
So now over in Larry old, merry old England town, the chaos was brought about by the feud of the Empress Matilda versus King Stephen. So that the chaos that those two together had, which was called the Anarchy, which we've mentioned in previous episodes, that ended when King Stephen died in October 1154, bringing an end to this long dispute between the two families called the Anarchy, which I mentioned, which left England in exactly that. Like, England had to stop focusing on its attacks in England, in Scotland and Wales, because it had so much of its own problems. And this was a huge help to Rhys and Cadell and Meredith. During this time, they managed to extend a lot of their rule because there was so much going on across the border. And with disunity within the realm no longer a problem, and a new king of England, Henry II, he was like, right, I'm back to my old ways of the English trying to take over Wales. Course, and he turned his attention westward.
You must have seen that the meme going around where it's like, oh, when the King of England is feeling down in medieval times, and it's like, it's going like, oh, I just feel so despondent. He goes, does my lord want to commit atrocities in Ireland? And he goes, oh, it's similar to that. And he goes, should we reconquer Wales again? Yes, go on then.
Yeah, so he began with an invasion in Gwynedd in 1157, and this invasion was not entirely successful, but Owain Gwynedd was induced to seek terms to give up some of the territories in the northeast of Wales. The following year, Henry prepared to invade the Haybarth. Now, in classic Lord Rhys fashion, he was so up for a scrap, and he made huge plans to resist and defend his newly reformed kingdoms. He was like, fucking come on in, bat! Fucking join
us. I was about to say, I've got this idea. Lord Rhys is like a sort of football hooligan esque kind of character. Fucking come on in, top off sort of thing in the stands. Like, yeah,
tops
bring
off
it.
A lot of tops off action. But by this stage, he'd had a council around him because he was like, right, I'm a good fighter, but I do need a bit more of, like, you know, he's clever enough to seek a council. And they persuaded him to come to peace terms with the king. However, again, like he probably should have trusted his gut, because these terms he was given were far harsher than those offered to Owain. So Owain Gwynedd, he got given a much better thing, and Lord Rhys got given shit, and he now lost his chance.
Was that because Owain was maybe perceived as a bigger player?
Definitely, I guess. Yeah, and this led to him not having enough time now to build. When he realised what the terms were, it was too late, because he's already kind of accepted them, and he hadn't have enough time to prepare. And he no longer had chance to build up his defences, and he was stripped of all of his possessions apart from Cantref Mawr, though he was promised one other Cantref, which Cantrefs are like small hamlets.
And they're meant to be 100 houses or something, isn't it?
Something like that. They're relatively large areas of land, but not huge, but they're not, you know, they're not very profitable, and they're not fit for the Lord. It's also considered that during either this act of homage or a later act of homage, that Rhys succumbed to the English king and acknowledged him as the top dog. And it suggests that there's agreement whereby Rhys would drop his title of Tywysog, the Welsh equivalent of a prince or a king, and instead referred to the chronicles as Lord Rhys. And it's also worth putting out that the word Tywysog doesn't mean the same in English. We've said this a few times. The modern Welsh means prince, but historically it refers to a broader category of rulers. So it derives from the Welsh
Tywys. It's like leader, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like leader, champion, kind of like, Tywysog is equivalent of easily like a king.
Yeah. Well, it
England,
literally,
isn't it, sort of thing?
It derives from Welsh Tywys, which means to lead. So the literal meaning of Tywysog is the one who leads. So Owain Gwynedd, who was King of Gwynedd, also recognised the need for prudence and political subtlety, saw allegiance and changed his own title from king to prince. But Lord Rhys being the outlier, he was like, right, I'm a lord. And Wales doesn't have lords. So he was kind of like, again, speaks to his character to be like, right, I won't be a Tywysog. I won't lower myself to a prince, but I will be a lord. And this could be seen as a way to incorporate. Another reason that they think they wanted the Welsh to do this was so they could see them incorporating Welsh hierarchy into a more feudal system that was happening in Norman England. But it could also be seen as a savvy way for the Welsh to stay distinct from the English. So they don't mind saying, all right, I'll be a prince, because in Welsh it's got a different term when we say a Tuath. So it distincts them from the English, and it can still be called leaders, but not upsetting the stronger forces of the kings of England. So I won't be a king, but I'll be a prince, and we don't mind that.
Yeah, you get less heat on you from across the border if you go, I'm a prince, than a king. And it's also, isn't it something to do with, like, based on, like, the Roman princeps as
well? Yeah, I think we covered that before, haven't we?
I think we did talk about the Cambria Chronicles, didn't we? And it's, like, it's something to do with princeps in Roman, like, Latin.
Yeah.
Is like it's almost like emperor, or like it's almost higher than king.
Okay, exactly.
It's something to do with that. I can't remember the exact thing. Now,
so anyway, he decided to opt for lordries, which is like we haven't had one since or after, so it's quite cool. But either way, this agreement adds real salt into the wound of this proud Welsh warrior, because he fought so hard for the territories, and these were now just returned back into the hands of the Norman lords. And among the Norman lords who returned to their holdings was Walter de Clifford, who reclaimed Cantre Buchan. And now this little cheeky cant was horrible. He wasn't happy enough with the land he'd been given, and now started to invade Rhys's lands in Catra Baud. Lord Rhys appealed to the king. He was like, listen, you've reduced me to this one place, and it's been attacked. So he went the right way about it. He was like, stop this. And the king just completely ignored the response. He didn't even like give anything back. So Rhys realized there's only one thing for it. He had gad to the sword, and he resorted to arms. And so he was like, well, fuck you, man. This is what I'm built for.
It sounds like it's like Green Street, you know, Green Street hooligans. that's the major, don't you? That's Major Lord Rhys over there.
Well, he rallied his men who were so quick to come to him, and he started capturing Clifford Castle. Walter de Clifford, he was like, you come from my house, you bring a knife, I'll bring a gun. You send one of mine to the hospital, I'll take you to the fucking morgue, my son.
Yeah.
And he was like,
all Lord Rhys men, like that guy from fucking Superbad, going, I've been waking up every night and praying for a fight.
So he captured Lord Rhys's, Clifford's castle at Llandovery, and then started seizing Ceredigion. King Henry now responded by preparing another invasion, but Rhys's army and resources had been so heavily restricted that he was forced to submit again without resistance. So he was like, right, I've taken parts of Ceredigion, I'm taking Llandovery, but this is tiny and he's only one man with not any family left. So he had to submit and like come to terms, and he had to give hostages, probably including his son, Hywel.
So, I can feel the rage, just going. You know, you're pushed to the brink. You fight back after being treated like shit,
and then
they go, "Oh, look, you can't actually beat us, so you have to fucking renege."
And I think at the time, Wales is like England has like 13 times the amount of people as Wales, and this isn't fighting a united Wales. This is fighting a small kingdom in Wales. So he's just so outnumbered, So now it gets to 1159. He's been like 4 years of this kind of on and off kind of, it's been a very tough time for him. He's lost all of his family. He's lost all of his land. But the English king goes off to France for a war. So our boy Rhys took the opportunity to get off his knees. And back on the saddle of war. And he led an attack on Dyfed, and then laid siege to Carmarthen, which he saved allegedly which apparently was saved by a relief force led by Earl Reginald of Cornwall. And apparently this guy was the illegitimate son of King Henry I. So he was kind of doing a lot to try and prove his worth.
Something to prove.
Yeah. So being overrun, Rhys retreated to Cantre Mawr, where an army led by five earls, the earls of Cornwall, Gloucester, Hereford, Pembrokeshire, and Salisbury, all marched against him. Lord Rhys is like, all right, we've taken over a bit of castle shit, Scarpa. The earls
bitten off more like a chew on this one.
And then the earls were assisted by Cadwallader, brother of Owain Gwynedd, aka Owain Fawr, and Owain's son, Hywel and Cynan. So now you might think it's strange that this great leader of Gwynedd's sons would fight against Rhys and fellow Welsh countrymen. Mm. But it's because Owain Gwynedd had over 20 children. Some of them were less aligned to his father's ambitions and sided with the enemies. So like this Hywel and Cynan weren't necessarily close to Owain Gwynedd. And we already know Cadwaladr was a bastard.
Yeah,
and we've already mentioned like, you know, Owain's brother being a right bastard.
Owain Gwynedd saying, come on, mate, I got 20 of them. I can't keep them all in line, can I?
So this fucking army of five bastards, isn't that like a Lord of the Rings thing? Or like, the Battle of the Five Armies?
I can imagine that. Yeah, the Battle of Five Bastards coming at me.
So Cornwall, Gloucester, Hereford, Pembroke and Salisbury, and then Owain's sons, Hywel and Cynan, and they surrounded Cadtrev, and it's instead of like going into a battle where they'd probably have to lose a lot of their own men whilst he defended his hometown, the Earls decided to withdraw, and they just signed it. There's a truce agreed because Rhys had also been treated poorly by them, so there's kind of a slight understanding amongst the people. They come to this. By this is now 1162, and they've come to a truce. But it wasn't long until Rhys again attempted to recover his lost sons, and he recaptured Llandudno Castle.
I love that. Listen, I promise I won't start another scrap.
Fingers crossed behind his back.
Signed on the dotted line with the old crossed fingers. Mm. Yeah, I love it.
So the following year, Henry II returned to England after an absence of 4 years and prepared for another invasion into Haybarth. It's Mike. Like, imagine just being like a farmer or a serf into Haybarth, like literally constantly getting invaded.
Here we go again.
Your leader runs past, takes the castle.
Seeing an Norman army, like, propping over a hill and going, oh, for fuck's sake, again? It's the third time in the last five years.
Lord Rhys run past, going, fucking hell, there's fucking loads of them. He just, like, sprints up.
Pick up your pitchforks, lads, we're having another scrap. Oh, Rhys, mate, we've been doing this for ages now.
Yeah, so, yeah, so he's like been gone for a good couple of years. He comes back, and because of this constant invading and all this like madness back and forth, and the castles are getting destroyed, and the normals getting like burnt down, to avoid more bloodshed, and like the cost of this is just getting like ridiculous for one man causing all this fucking bedlam.
Yeah,
Rhys met with the king to discuss terms and was obliged to give more hostages, including another son, Maledith. But then there's a twist. When he went there to give him all this stuff, because they were like, right, we know this is hard work, you're a fucking nightmare, but we will come to an agreement. The bastards took him hostage, and they captured Rhys as like a fucking ploy, and he was taken to England as a prisoner.
Dodgy bastards.
But for unknown reasons, Henry didn't know exactly what to do with him, and after a few weeks decided to free him and allowed him to rule Cantrip Mad one more time. And I come to this later, but apparently Lord Rhys was really charming and quite funny. This is kind of represented later on in the story, but it makes sense that he wasn't even killed. He was taken prisoner in the like mercy of the king, and he was still allowed to, even though he'd burnt down
after
all these
being
Norman
such a
castles.
Pain in the ass,
So anyway,
being a laugh back then used to take you a long way.
So
he was a joke.
Sent back to Cantref Mawr, and from there, Rhys summoned.
I just love that though. It's like take him for a prisoner. Like, right, we've had enough of your shenanigans now. Right, you're coming with us. Lock him in chains. We're taking him to England. He tells a couple of good jokes. Goes, oh, let him go for God's sake.
Don't do it again.
Right, honest now. Don't do it again, though. All right, I promise, my lord. I promise. Yeah.
So he was sent back to Cantref Mawr, where he'd kind of like been for a while, and then time passed, and he was summoned to appear before Henry at Woodstock to do homage together with Owain Gwynedd and Malcolm IV of Scotland. So quite an important people to be summoned along with, which again speaks to the volume of him. So how about we end the episode here, and then I do part two next week to give us, because this is like a good part to the story to stop, because I'm nearly about halfway through, and the second half is fucking class.
The calm before the storm.
Yeah.
Is it?
So, you know, we've learned of how he became who he is. And now I think it's a good point of the story to break. So
perfect.
If I'm happy to do that, I'll just.
Great, mate. Yeah. I'm intrigued. I can't wait. I mean, lucky for me, I'm going to hear it in the next
straight
like,
away.
10 minutes. Yeah. So this is great. I don't have to wait.
Well, diolch yn fawr, everyone. Can you start leaving us 5-star reviews to read out, because we haven't done them in a while. I think we haven't had some in a while. So if you got this far, can you just leave us a mad review and we'll read it out, and it's quite fun to do.
Just do absolute mad drivel if you want. Yeah. We'll read it out. We don't mind.
Diolch and grandma, guys. Catch you next week. I'm going to go grab a drink, Jack. So I'll see you in a second.
Yeah, ta-da, ta-da, ta-da.
Right, mate, I'll go for a wee, and then I'll